Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm Ted Berg, joined as always in Zoom conference by the Athletics Mets beat writer Tim Britton. And Tim, the Mets won a game last night against the Phillies as we speak on Monday morning. But I think at this point, you have to admit that it's too little too late.
First of all, I appreciate that you added back in the as always, because after I had been gone for 4 months there, I noticed that you dropped it in our recent episode, that you were no longer joined as always by me, because it wasn't true.
It felt sporadic. Then, for a minute there, it felt sporadic.
And now we're back to normal. The Mets are 5.5 games back in the division still, and 3.5 back in Philadelphia for second place. They are 7 out in the wild card, which is crazy because a week ago they were I believe 3 games out in that. And the teams that they were chasing outside of the one, the Cardinals, have not played well in that span. Like, they've gotten teams like the Reds to lose series to the Pirates, things that they needed to happen as long as they won. And they've happened outside of the Mets performing well in their own series against St. Louis and Philadelphia. So the math is not, this is not Algebra 1 math. It's more complex for them at this point. They need still to basically make up 2 games on the Braves in the next week and a half to give them a shot to be back, you know, within 3.5 for that final series. But it looks like they might also, by that point, still be behind Philadelphia and need help from them, even if things break right for them. Those teams are playing easier schedules this week. I think the Phillies are playing maybe it's the Orioles and Nationals, something like that, while the Braves are playing in Arizona and in San Diego. Arizona's not very good. San Diego is not playing very well, especially lately. So it's you know, the odds are quite long, and probably as long as they have been at any point in the season for the Mets. So I think we can probably get to the point where we're looking more ahead than behind.
Yeah, the Phillies have 3 against the Orioles and then 4 against the Pirates coming up. And, you know, you alluded to it, but I guess the important thing to keep in mind is that this Mets team had every opportunity to climb back into the race, really even to overtake the Braves and Phillies, even in just the last few weeks, and they just simply did not take it. This is not a postseason team. They don't deserve to be a postseason team. It's disappointing. It's especially disappointing because they were in first place for such a large portion of this season, but the cracks have all become way too clear, and I think a couple of them were almost underscored by the win on Sunday night, because you could see the big hits from Dom Smith and Jeff McNeil and think, man, where have those been all year?
Yeah, it really, you know, you look at what this team has done this year, and we've said it a lot. We've said it really dating back to like the second week of the season. That the offense has just not performed the way you expected the offense to perform. And a lot of that focus early on in the season was on Francisco Lindor. And he's been better, like we talked about last week, since really the end of May. You know, there was a lot on Michael Conforto before and shortly after his injured hamstring that he suffered in May. And he's been better of late, still not, you know, where he wants to be going into a free agent offseason. But then I think the two guys that have really been perplexing and guys who are here to stay, you would think, or under team control for a while, are Dominic Smith and Jeff McNeil. You know, McNeil Looking at his numbers now, just a 252 average, a 318 on base, 364 slugging. It's an 89 OPS plus. This is a guy who, coming into the season, I believe his career batting average coming into this year was about where his on-base percentage is this year. Yeah, his batting average coming into the year was 319. His OBP this year is 318. It's really been an offensive struggle for him. And you look at a lot of the peripheral numbers for him, you know, how hard is he hitting the ball? How often is he barreling a ball up? You know, is he, what's the hard hit percentage? What's the exit velocity, the max exit velocity, kind of those StatCast offensive numbers? They're down, but they're not down to the extent that the batting average and the slugging percentage are down. You know, his OPS is down 150 points from last year, and last year was not his best year. You know, last year was the worst of his 3 years in the major leagues. And so it's been a little perplexing to watch, and I think for him to experience that, it doesn't seem to him, at least, as if he's changed much of his approach, and yet the results are so much worse. And actually talking to a couple people with the Mets, they don't think that the results should be this bad. You know, his batting average on balls in play is down like 60 points from where it has been previously in his career. So there are things that suggest this is kind of anomalous for him. I know there are fans that already want to give up on him. You know, I think it might be fair to say that, man, that 2019 season might end up being the best season of his career. But I still think there's probably a good player in there, and certainly someone better than he's shown this year. And then Dominic Smith, you know, his 2020, we all knew that was going to be difficult for him to replicate. You know, the OPS was just under 1,000. He was on pace to set, I think, a franchise record for extra base hits had the season been 162 games, if you just extrapolated his pace. He was going to slow down from where he was, but I don't think anyone expected it to come this far back, where he's looking more like he did kind of that first season and a half in the majors than he did in 19 and 20. And that's a big question, because, you know, he doesn't fit your roster defensively at the moment without a designated hitter. You know, he's playable in left field. He's turned himself into a playable left fielder, but not a positive value left fielder. You don't know if you're going to have the designated hitter, and you probably won't know for most of the offseason as well. There are a lot of fans that I see who say, you know, trade Smith unless you have the DH. But you're not going to know that probably until February, so that you're not going to be able to build your offseason plan around that information. And, you know, even if you have a DH and you want to put him at first base, is he going to hit enough to play a premium offensive position if he's not giving you a lot of defensive value? And so I think there are probably more questions surrounding him long term than maybe anyone else on the roster.
I want to get to some of these offseason questions. We're going to obviously spend a whole lot of time on them coming up, because there's not a lot of regular season questions worth discussing at this point. But one point I've been thinking about with the Mets and missing the playoffs and how disappointing they've been is, when you look at a championship team or you look at a really good team, even the teams you expect to be good, invariably, there are a couple of guys every year on the good teams who perform way above what you'd expect. The current San Francisco Giants are just like lined with them. The 2021 Mets, I don't think, unless you want to say Jonathan Villar, I don't think there's a single offensive player who has been, and Javi Baez, who's been great since they got him, but he's only been here for, you know, a fifth of the season or a quarter of the season. There's not a single guy who is like, oh, he played way better than you expected him to.
Yeah, I mean, you say basically that Alonso and Nimmo are the two guys who have kind of played the way you mm-hmm. thought they might, in terms of, or have hit the way you thought they might. But outside of that, everyone else has kind of been much worse than you expected coming into the season. You know, Lindor has been below his track record. McCann has been below his track record. We just talked about McNeil and Smith. Conforto's been worse. JD Davis, you know, Davis is kind of a weird season to evaluate, because the overall numbers look very good. They look better than I think it feels with the way that mm-hmm. he's hit. And he's, you know, he's missed a lot of time, so it's five home runs. And it's not the power that you expect out of him, but the overall, you know, the on-base percentage is 389. He's had a nice season in that regard. It just feels like he hasn't been the consistent presence because of playing time lately and injuries earlier in the year. But yeah, that the whole roster, you expect, you know, there are going to be guys who don't play up to their standard in any given season. You look at a team like the Dodgers and, yeah, like Cody Bellinger is having an absolutely miserable season and the team is still doing well. And that's because they have, you know, like Chris Taylor is having a good year up until like the last month where he slumped a lot. And Will Smith is a good player, but probably not a guy you expected to be hitting quite to the level that he's hit this season. And they've had different guys step up. You know, if Bellinger is 80% worse than you thought he was going to be, they've got a bunch of guys who are 10 to 15% better making up for it. And the Mets don't have those guys making up for the down season of so many of their players.
It puts them in a really strange spot. A lot of things put them in a really strange spot heading into the offseason. For one thing, every team is going to be in something of a strange spot because there is this looming collective bargaining agreement, and we don't know. It seems almost like everyone expects a lockout. And so you don't know, I guess, when that's necessarily going to come and to what extent it's going to affect teams' off-season plans. You alluded to the fact, you didn't allude to, you just straight up said that they won't know whether there's even going to be a DH in the National League next year until very late in the off-season at the earliest, which is ridiculous. They should just, it feels like everyone is on the same page on that one, and they might as well just say so. And yet it's clearly not going to happen because that's not how Major League Baseball operates. And then, you know, the Mets have all of these players who you want to say, like you said, Jeff McNeil, there's a good player in there, right? And so I think if you're looking at like your traditional microeconomics, you say, well, we don't sell low, right? Like you shouldn't trade Jeff McNeil at this point of his career, coming off the worst season of his career. But at the same time, you absolutely can't just return all these same players and say, okay, well, maybe they'll be better this year.
Yeah, I think we talked last week. You don't want to just run it back with these guys and hope for so many players to rebound from a down season. I do think there is one thing that my first thought going into the offseason with the roster is, you know, I see a lot of fans who want to, you know, like, you know, McNeil's having the season he's having, trade him, see what you can get for him and move on, or trade Dom Smith for a reliever, you know. You don't have to trade any of these players.
Yes, you do, to satisfy. Do you have to satisfy my bloodlust for trades?
They're all under inexpensive team control. You're a team that has financial flexibility in a way that so few teams have because of the wealth of your owner. And the sport is moving in a direction where, like, you don't have to come to opening day of the season and say, here are my 8 regulars and here are my 5 bench guys. And there's a real distinct split between those two groups. I look at a guy like McNeil and think he's a guy, you know, maybe he's not the guy who gets 700 plate appearances for a championship team anymore. Maybe you can't count on him going into next season as, we're going to hit him second, he's going to get 700 plate appearances, he's going to be an offensive star for us, he's going to play second base every day. But you say, we can get him 450 plate appearances, he's going to play some second, maybe he plays some third, plays some left, he plays some right, plays everywhere, and performs really well for us. And maybe he doesn't start on opening day, but he's still going to fit into a lot of roles, you know, the way that like Jonathan Villar has for them this year. Villar's got 465 plate appearances at this point in the season, and he was not an opening day starter. He was not supposed to get this many plate appearances. We've seen, you know, with the number of injuries that all teams go through, but in particular this franchise, it would be helpful. You know, we've seen just the last couple of weeks when they've been having Davis and Smith on the bench, that's helped their bench. Their bench has been much better because those guys are on it. You know, if you go into next year and you keep JD Davis, you keep Jeff McNeil, you keep Dominic Smith, maybe even you keep Robinson Cano, like we talked about recently. He's on the roster.
I keep forgetting. Yeah.
Like, you can roster all of those guys, and they don't all have to be starters. None of them have to be starters. That can be your bench. Like, you can you can work through some things. You know, there might be a little defensive rigidity in that bench, not a lot of flexibility. But, like, I don't think we need to – you don't need to – it's not an either-or where it's like either Dominic Smith is the starting left fielder or he's not on the team, or either JD Davis is the starting third baseman or he's not on the team. Those guys are in arbitration. They're not making a ton of money. You're not paying, you know, you don't have to come to terms with them on a long-term contract the way you have to with someone like Conforto potentially. So you can carry them through the uncertainty to see where they are. You know, if there is another team out there that says, you know, we love Dominic Smith's bat, we need a first baseman, we think we value what he can do for us at first base so much that we're going to trade you something, someone who fits your roster better. And that's not a reliever, because relievers, you don't trade for relievers. I don't think it's a good idea really to ever trade for relievers, because I've seen too many of them go south. But, you know, if someone wants to trade you their number three starter, a solid number three mid rotation starter for Dominic Smith, and that pitcher's under cost control the same way Smith is, well then yeah, that's a trade that could make sense for you. But you don't put him on the market and say, okay, we're going to get whatever we can get for Dominic Smith, we'll take the best offer. Because he's had a down season. The guy was really, really good for you, not just in 2020, but in 2019 as well. He's shown some growth in the outfield. You will probably be getting a designated hitter before too long in the sport. That he could be of value to your roster. He doesn't have to be an everyday player for you to have value. In fact, he might have more value for you when he's not an everyday player, because it does seem like that everyday. That playing every day for so long this year did catch up with him. He is the one position player on the roster who was on opening day roster who did not go to the injured list at all. And I think we've seen him play through some things over the course of the season. And now that he's gotten, you know, he hasn't played a lot in the month of September, he's looked maybe a little bit fresher, at least on Sunday night.
You have just jinxed Dominic Smith. Hopefully tread carefully in the game Tuesday night to Dom Smith.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I think we're going to have time over the next couple months to probably get into every single offseason decision facing this team. So I want to start with a few of the ones that seem sort of obvious to me. Guys coming up for qualifying offers, Michael Conforto and Noah Syndergaard. Anyone else? Is it just those two?
Yeah, they can't give it to Stroman because right. he's already had it. They can't give it to Baez because he was traded midseason. I mean, they could conceivably give one to VR or Jerry's Familia. Like, those guys are, you're allowed to give them a qualifying offer. I don't think they're in the neighborhood that you would want to do that. You know, Aaron Loop, you could give a qualifying offer to. I don't think that's a possibility, really.
I would like them to give Aaron Loop a qualifying offer just for being cool and just like, hey, you know what? You earned $20 million. Like, take it. Like, yes, just have this money because you were really, really, really good this year and you seem like a cool guy with the whole Busch Light thing. I don't think that's how they're going to play it, but I have to imagine, like, it seems Conforto, even after this season, it seems like a no-brainer to me, right? Like, it just seems like that's sort of like the perfect situation for the Mets because if he takes it, then you get to run it back with Conforto. You've seen him produce. You know he's a better player than this. it buys you a year to maybe, if you want to go back to thinking about an extension. Remember, coming into the season, it seemed like extending Conforto should have been one of their top priorities. And now no one's super eager to give Conforto a $9 million contract. I'm sorry, a nine-figure contract, understandably. But he has been that guy in the past. And the qualifying offer is a very low-risk way of seeing if he wants to do that in New York. Again, now I think there's a chance he turns it down just to have that pillow season be in a better offensive environment. But it seems like there's really no harm in extending it.
Yeah, I think that it is a no-brainer. You extend the qualifying offer to him. My real pet peeve with the qualifying offer is the verb you have to use for it is always extend, because the other one would be offer, and you can't say offer the qualifying offer. It's a real issue in baseball writing. They got to rename it. That's the biggest issue in the CBA, in my mind.
What about resign and re-sign?
You know, I've gotten used to that. You always just got to put the dash in the re-sign. Mm-hmm. Just make sure. That's an English language problem. With Conforto, yeah, like I would actually say the chances of him accepting it are probably below 50% at this point. Not much below 50%. They're certainly higher than they were at the beginning of the season, when you thought he was going to sign a 5 or 6 year deal worth $20 million plus per season. The qualifying offer will be in the $19 million to $20 million range. I think you extend that to him. I'm interested. You know, he'll get a good read of his market over the course of time when he's debating whether to accept that or not. And see where, you know, there are other factors that come into his decision, and that will be kind of the labor uncertainty. You know, he's the Mets player rep. He's familiar with what's going on, and that this is maybe not the best year to be a guy coming off of. It's a tough year to be a free agent regardless, especially if you're coming off a bad season the way he is. And also, like, what do some other outfielders do? Is Nick Castellanos a free agent as well? Because he's got an opt-out clause, and a guy who's got kind of a similar track record and coming off a much better season. And who else gets a qualifying offer? If, you know, is Castellanos a free agent without a qualifying offer, then it becomes a lot more attractive than a guy who has rejected a qualifying offer, and those types of things. So I think it's win-win for the Mets, because having him back on a one-year $20 million deal is not a bad thing for this team. Again, they've got money. They can afford that in a way that maybe they wouldn't have been able to just a short time ago. So I think he's... Yeah, like, you extend the qualifying offer. He's probably less likely to accept it than the other guy I assume you're going to ask me about. But I think that's where you start your offseason.
I'm going to ask you about that guy in a second, but I want to ask also, what about a verb for on base percentage or slugging or OP? Oh, slugging has one, but I feel like it's a lot easier to say, like, Jeff McNeil hit .330 last year than to say, like, Jeff McNeil had a .390 on base percentage last year, right? And so what if there was just, like, Jeff McNeil on base .390 last year? Wouldn't that make your life easier?
Yeah, I mean, like, reached, because sometimes I'll say, like, reached base at a .390 clip or something like that. But yeah, there's definitely, I've gone to OPS apostrophe D, like OPS'd, in the past. It would be nicer. I feel sometimes when I do slash lines, I'll say he hit this, yeah, non-base percentage of this, and then I'll skip the slugging and go right to OPS. And I wonder if there's any, like, real big slugging percentage fans who are like, we're getting screwed out in the slash line again. They never want
to. They could do the math.
They got to say three things. They can't say slugging. Come on.
Yeah, sometimes I like going, like, with, like, he slashed .311, .383, .454, or whatever, like, you know, because slashed is sort of like an active type thing that works for me. But yeah, I think that it is it's holding back sabermetrics, honestly, is that it's just way easier to use the traditional, like, he drove in this many runs. Noah Syndergaard.
I think what's holding back sabermetrics is the inconsistent capitalization in some of their stats, that WRC plus, like, that weighted gets lowercase, the W, and it just throws people off.
Well, and the two wins above replacement numbers, very, very, like, bad, I think, if you're trying to make that number catch on, you have to settle on a number.
To take this conversation full circle, I did ask both Luis Rojas and Hugh Quattlebaum about Jeff McNeil's ex-WOBA this week, expected weighted on-base average, and they both agreed that he should that it's not as bad as the primary stats, like we were talking about earlier. With Syndergaard, I think he's also pretty much a no-brainer to give to extend the qualifying offer to. You know, the talent, you know what the talent level is like there. We've seen guys, you know, if Noah Syndergaard had come back and had 10 relatively healthy, decent starts, he would be signing a contract worth $80 million plus probably. Mm-hmm. And so since he's not getting that chance, like there is a risk involved in giving him a 1 year deal for $19 or $20 million if he accepts it. And I think he's probably higher than 50-50 to accept a qualifying offer at this stage. You know, he's not throwing a breaking ball this season. If he does come back, he hasn't thrown his sliders since he had his setback in June. He hasn't thrown a curveball since then. So, you know, there's the possibility you pay $20 million to a two pitch guy, a fastball changeup guy who at that point is really more of a reliever than a starter. But again, it's on a 1 year deal. Like I feel like for the Mets, where the Mets are financially, any 1 year deal is not that risky for them. Like they can afford to take that chance if it helps them out long term. And I think with both Conforto and Syndergaard, it's worth that risk because of the ceiling on those guys' talent level. So Syndergaard, you bring him back, you know, you can't have too many pitchers on this roster as we've seen this year. If he accepts that, you get a chance for him to build his level before he hits the age of 30 in free agency. He'd still be relatively young hitting free agency as a pitcher. And that's why I think I think he's got a better chance to take it than Conforto at this point.
Yeah, my gut would say the same, and I have no inside information, but it's just, especially, you know, not just that Syndergaard hasn't played at all this year, which probably makes it a little bit more tempting, but also Syndergaard just seems like he's in the New York life so much. Like it feels like he likes being here like this. And not that Conforto necessarily doesn't, but like I didn't read a New York Times article this morning about Michael Conforto's book club, you know? And so to me, it just feels like Syndergaard wants to be here. It's a great situation for a pitcher, right? Like for a pitcher looking for that 1 year to get himself to free agency. It's perfect, especially, you know, now Syndergaard's never played with Lindor behind him. And you know, maybe, and this is going to be this is a little tease, this is going to be our question, maybe there's a plus defensive second baseman next to Lindor as well. And so for Syndergaard, I got to think, like, that's too much to turn down.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's the ballpark, especially, is a better spot for a pitcher to rebuild value in a 1 year deal than a hitter. But Syndergaard is a guy who has kind of understood what New York can do for him in terms of a personal brand. Not that Conforto doesn't understand that. It's just, you know, Michael Conforto has not had the same opportunities that Noah Syndergaard has had to build that kind of brand. And so for him, you know, going to, I don't know, Detroit or Texas or something like that is not... he's not going to get more commercials or less commercials out of that in a way that Syndergaard in New York might be more marketable than the outfielder. So you're right. I think it does make more sense probably for Syndergaard, even for off-field reasons than just the on-field ones.
We have a question from Doug, who's asked us a few questions across this year, always good ones. This one, very simple and straightforward. He says, for the same price, would you rather have Javi Baez or Marcus Semien at second base?
You know, I disagree with your idea that that's a very simple question, because price is doing a lot of work in that question.
That's true. It's not a simple. It's not a simple question. It's a very economically worded question.
Yeah. So because with price, you have to think: is that including? You know, I assume that it's worded in the way that, like, oh, you could have each for this contract. Who would you prefer? But there's two caveats to that. One is that it is very likely at this point in time that signing Marcus Stroman costs you a draft pick compensation, because he's probably going to be extended the qualifying offer himself by Toronto, and Javi Baez wouldn't. And right now, that draft pick compensation for the Mets would be the 14th pick in the draft, which is pretty high. I know they've given that up in the past for Michael Kadire, which was probably not the wisest move that Sandy Alderson had made as his first time around as general manager. And, you know, if you're factoring that in and you're saying, okay, you can have each of them for, I don't know, 6 years and $120 million, but Semien also costs you the 14th draft pick next year, that's a sizable asterisk in there. The second part is contract length, because I think, you know, Semien is 2 years older than Baez. If you're asking me which one I want in 2022, 2023, maybe even 2024, I think Semien is probably the better bet. I can imagine Baez having the best season in that group, but I think there's a little bit more range to his possibilities. I think he's got a lower floor as a player as well. And I think Semien will give you, even though his highs have been very high in 2019 and 2021, like legitimate MVP candidate, I guess in the way Baez was in 18 as well with the Cubs. You know, I think he's got probably more of a steady performance. His numbers were down in 2020. It was basically because he had a really bad first 2 weeks, and that crushes you in a 60-game season. So I think in the short term, I would want Semien. But if you're saying, you know, which one do you want to sign to a six-year contract, Baez is... I think he's 29 now, and Semien is 31 by the time next year kicks in. Baez turns 29 in December. Semien turns 31.
He just turned 31. Three days ago. Yeah. Happy birthday to him.
Yeah, you know, if you're signing a guy to a six-year contract, you don't want a middle infielder at 36. The Mets have seen that with Robinson Cano, the way that production can spin down at that point in a career. So then if it's a long-term deal, I'd want Baez. If you're saying, you know, you can frame the years however you want, the money is the same, I'd probably take Semien.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to think about it. Like, it doesn't feel like this would be the case, but Semien, if you go back 3 years, better player. Go back 5 years, he's been a better player. Baez has so much more star power, I think, owing to the fact that he was on the Cubs team that won the first championship in 108 years, owing to the fact that he has that prospect sheen, owing to the fact that he has these, you know, spectacular and like weirdly instinctual defensive plays and base running moves. And he's just, you know, so fun to watch. But I'm biased because Semien has played so many of his games on the West Coast that I haven't really seen him play all that much. You know, so much of his time was in Oakland, and he's a really good player. Like, I have to assume that watching someone like that every single night, like, there's going to be plenty of times where it's extremely fun. And so it's almost like, and you know, I didn't even consider the qualifying offer point. I think that might be the deal breaker right there, but where I was going to come down was to say, like, that my brain sort of thinks it's probably Marcus Semien, but my heart and gut definitely go with Baez.
Yeah, I mean, there's an entertainment value to what he brings above and beyond what the Baseball Reference or Fangraphs page talks about. And we've seen that with the Mets. You know, I wrote about base running for Monday Morning. And one thing I didn't put in there was the way that, you know, Baez kind of electrified the Mets with his base running to this point. You know, some bad plays in there, some bad nights in there base running wise, but certainly some other plays that no one else on this roster and maybe no one else in the major leagues can make as a base runner. Tony Tarasco, the first base coach who's responsible for base running, called him kind of a dash of cayenne pepper to the roster, what he's able to bring and how it just, you know, it motivates other guys to look for opportunities to be more aggressive on the base paths. And that's, you know, for a team that does not run the bases very well or very aggressively at this point in time because of a general lack of team speed, but even the fastest guys aren't the best base runners. That could be an important thing to have moving forward is a guy who kind of sets that tone for you alongside Francisco Lindor. So I think it's an interesting question. I don't know that it's one that the Mets are going to actively engage in because of that qualifying offer issue. Like, I think the guys are close enough where if the money is similar, you lean Baez because you keep your draft pick. Now, if the Mets fall further in the standings, if that draft pick goes into the top 10, then they're picking 10 and 11. They can't give up the number 11 pick. The compensation changes. It becomes a second round pick. It's a little less expensive in terms of price to sign a guy who rejects the QO. But this is getting into minutia that's probably not needed for Doug.
I don't think that's minutia. I think that means that we should be rooting for the Mets to lose out now, right?
Yeah, I don't advocate teams to tank at any point in time, really. It would, you know.
Oh, but they're right there. They're right there.
I think it's they're 2.5 games clear of the Rockies are the team that currently would draft 10th. The Mets are 2.5 games clear of them. I believe it's the Tigers Indians and Angels that are also in between. Maybe it's just two of those teams. Maybe it's just the Tigers and Angels. I think the Cleveland is ahead of the Mets. So you'd need to fall flat on your face a little bit. You'd probably need to finish something like 3-9 or something to get that. The Rockies have played better lately, but it's the watching this team is tough enough. You don't want to like actively root for them to lose at any point, even at this point in the season.
Yeah, I hear that. Like it's I couldn't get behind it while actually watching the games, I don't think, but you know, rationally speaking, like you know, it does make sense for them to fall apart here. And I get the like I have this suspicion that like even if they went for it, that would be when they started scoring 14 runs a game. Like this team couldn't even suck effectively.
And the other thing is like there are, you know, this conversation only affects guys who are going to get the qualifying offer from the non-Mets teams. So a guy like Semien, there are going to be good players who are ineligible for the qualifying offer for various reasons. Chris Bryant, you know, is not going to get a qualifying offer from the Giants. He can't. Starling Marte can't from the A's. Kevin Gausman can't from the Giants. There are going to be pretty good players available where the Mets want them. Where they will not have to pay that additional price. And this is another thing, just going back to our initial conversation about the roster and trade conversations with some of the guys who have underperformed this year. One of the things that the Mets did under Brody Van Wagenen, and one of the things they did a little bit more of in this past year than I expected them to, is that they traded more than I thought. And then they used their in-house talent. As you know, Sandy Alderson is fond of saying, there's two currencies in the sport. There's money and talent. And the Mets have paid a lot in talent over the years, especially under Van Wagenen, but even in something like the Lindor trade or the Javi Baez trade, whereas they should be a team that pays money most of the time. And signing guys who are not, even if it's the second round pick that you're giving up in for a qualifying offer, signing those guys, you do give up talent in addition to money, and maybe they should focus more on the guys who only take money.
I think that's exactly right. I want to see the Mets spend a lot of money and not give up a lot of talent. I think that's what you should be shooting for when you have the richest owner in all of sports and when you've already said you're going to be Dodgers East.
Yeah, and like a small point on Cano, for instance, I think one person asked at some point, like, what level of prospect would you have to attach to Robinson Cano to trade him to get out from under the remainder of his contract? Don't do that. That's not what the Mets should do at all. The Mets should be looking to trade for as many Robinson Canos as there are in the sport to add prospects at that level. Like, that's what, you know, if another team had Robinson Cano, I would be saying the Mets should trade for that guy. The Mets should get the other team out from under the contract and get a good prospect with him. The way like the Red Sox did, for instance, for Adam Ottavino last year. That's a much smaller contract they dealt for from the Yankees. But if there are teams that really want to get under the competitive balance tax and the Mets are willing to go over it, find those teams, find the guys who make $7 to $10 million who aren't going to be huge parts of that team. Say, we'll take this guy. We'll take that contract. Give us your 15th best prospect, the guy who's going to help us build depth in our system. That's another thing they should be looking to do this offseason.
What we should be looking to do, Tim, is speak again later this week about the Mets.
Yeah, they played two games in Boston, which seemed at certain points in the season like it would be a match of two juggernaut first place teams. Both have struggled a lot in the second half, although the Mets' struggles in the second half have made the Red Sox second half issues seem tame, although they've had more complicated off-field stuff with a COVID outbreak and all that, but they are still in position to make the postseason. As one of the more surprising teams in baseball this season, and it should be fun to see the Mets in Fenway Park again.
We will speak again soon. Peace out.
Adios.